VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Alex, who was our shambles of the season? Any journalists made a complete fool of themselves, would you say?
We can't wait.
Right. There's one journalist who would take this award for their performance in Newcastle over the weekend of the European Champions Cup final.
Was it shocking, though?
It was.
Yeah, I understood that.
I was staggered he's still employed, frankly.
Yeah.
Probably won't be after this.
No.
Big night out in Newcastle, enjoying the hospitality of the host city and the tournament organisers. Stumbled back to his hotel in the early hours of the morning, crashed out of sleep in his bed, woke up naked, mistook his room door for his bathroom door, and found himself locked out of his bedroom in the corridor, stark bollock naked, and in a pit of despair.
Okay.
But because of the amount of hospitality he'd enjoyed, he had assumed that his wife was in the room. So he's hammering on the door at 3 o'clock.
He must have been an absolute
4
shambles.
O'clock in the morning. I mean, how shambolic is this? Hammering on the door.
Right.
The next door neighbour...
He was clearly disorientated because he woke
outrageous up. Outrageous behaviour.
Yeah.
The next door neighbour opens her door to discover this journalist...
Yes.
...in a very compromising position in the corridor, laughs in his face, hurls him...
Well,
up.
I would, yeah.
Looks him up, looks him up and down.
Initially,
no, Scotty,
laughs
just
in his
we,
face.
From what we
haven't gather, named... initially she was quite impressed, this lady. When
go on.
Looked him up and down, laughed... threw him a bathrobe so he could go downstairs to get his room key. The identity of our award winner is...
Hi, everybody. I hope you're ready for one last trip round the rugby world. It's the final ruck of the season. And to mark the occasion, we've actually had a planning meeting before it, which is the first of the season. So that could make it either beautifully planned or a complete disaster. So try and stay on side with us. We will be back bigger and better, if that is possible, in the build-up to the Rugby World Cup. We've got special plans for making our coverage staggeringly brilliant from Japan 2019. And that means in the Times and Sunday Times, in the newspapers, on digital, on podcast. We are a multimedia employer. And just for this week, a very special panel, because we've gathered together the full podium from the Rugby Writer of the Year Awards. All three of us, joint second on the podium, was the great Alex Lowe and myself, somehow in second place, but I took it like a man. Plus, so Alex and I are here, plus the king of the circuit himself, the prince of hacks, and the queen of Richmond, Owen Slot. Chaps, we had our last games of the season on the weekend. But on an absolutely blessed day at Twickenham, what a way it was to go out with a brilliant Premiership final. Alex, before we pay tribute to the men in red, should we not also say something about Exeter Chiefs?
We definitely should. Their performance was staggeringly good for an hour, which should have been enough and probably would have been enough to beat any other team in Europe. When you look at, I remember a year ago, I interviewed Joe Simmons on the eve of the final, and then he played like a rabbit in the headlights against that the full might of Saracens, and Exeter just didn't have any answers to that power. 12 months on, and they were in control of that game. They played with physicality, they played with real skill, but also great character and spirit, and they were sensationally good for an hour. Score four tries against against Saracens.
It was their best performance of the season, wasn't it?
By a country mile, their best performance of the season. And then they just hit Saracens when the champions pulled out those kind of that moment of brilliance when they just decided we're not going to be beaten today. And there was nothing more that Exeter could have done to win that game. And that point was really hit home to me about an hour or so after the game, down in the bowels of Twickenham. The Saracens players had done their songs and they're all changed, including Alex Good, and have the medals around their necks. Henry Slade was still in his kit, still in his boots, and had this sort of haunted look on his face. And he came to talk to us, and fair play to him for doing that, because not everyone would have wanted to in those circumstances. And still an hour after the game, he was having to pause as he spoke, and he said, "I've never cried after a match, but I'm really struggling to hold it in because I've just never felt this feeling before." And it was that feeling of, we've done absolutely everything we can to win this game, and it still hasn't been quite enough. And it was one of those days where Jack Noel could easily and probably should have been man of the match, even though he was on the losing side. Ollie Devoto, a sort of an unsung hero, because Henry Slade gets a lot of plaudits. And
I'd never seen Devoto play as well as that. I thought he really raised it up to a new level for him.
Alex comes on, when I saw Devoto and Slade playing with such beautiful fluidity, I think, why have we waited all this long for Ben Teo and Manu Tuilagi to be fit when you've got two brilliant players like him? And I'd also add Alex Ozoski. Sorry, Alex.
So I spoke to Ben Kay in the build-up to the final as he was pulling his column together for Saturday's paper, and he was saying that the more he analysed how Exeter play, the more he had come to realise how important Ollie Devoto was to that team, is to that team. And I think your point about the England inside centre role is quite valid, that there's been an expectation from Eddie Jones that Ben Teo will just play for England no matter what he does at club level. Devoto has been on the fringes. He was capped a couple of years ago, but has never really been taken that seriously. And it took him a bit of time to settle at Exeter, in the same way it took Matt Kovacic a bit of time to settle. But he's been sensationally good, and certainly on Saturday, Devoto. And I'll just... Sorry, Jonesy, one more thing. I would just add that afterwards, their immediate thought from Henry Slade, from Rob Baxter, was, what more can we do? The arrival of Stuart Hogg next season, if you're looking at minute differences between just losing to Saracens and beating them, someone of his world-class ability, maybe that...
Okay, thanks, Alex. And Owen, the champs, the winners, four times in five years... the double winners. If you'd have been an Exeter player, would you have felt the same? How on earth were we ever going to beat that lot?
Yeah, they can do it from any position now, can't they? They can get a lead. They can come back from behind. They can win it tight like they did against Leinster, or they could win it by playing more rugby like they did against Exeter. They can dominate different parts of the game. I mean, they're box kicking and collecting and recycling the box kicks and then playing from that open that slightly open rugby has really sort of terrorised teams of late. I mean, they just seem to they can reinvent themselves. I mean, I don't want to sort of, make this a sort of Saracens comparison to England thing, but it's inevitably where I'm going. But England in the Six Nations had came out with a bloody good plan against Ireland that worked really well, didn't it? With all that kicking behind, and then they did it again against France, and they were really clinical and spot on with it. But then it just seemed that was the only thing they could do. They tried against Wales, wasn't working, and they were made to look foolish. And Saracens just seemed to go, "Oh, who are we playing this week? Let's do something different. What do we need this week? Let's do something different." They're outstanding.
The fluidity and the sort of tactical coherence of Exeter of Saracens is way in advance of England, and they're a far more sophisticated team when they're together. In my opinion, I also love, they are a magnificent team, and I've seen a few rugby teams over the years, going back donkey's years, even before they were leagues. And these guys, I think you always say that the best team you ever saw was the last team, but they are the best club team I've ever seen. And they're the best team outside the international arena, and they're the best team if they were in the international arena. I'd just like to bring out one guy, actually. I mean, Alex Lazoski, I've already said, what a hard guy. He's absolutely rock solid. Jackson Ray, again, we always say he's the guy who's not capped, but he's brilliant. For me, it was summed up in a way by Ralph Adams-Hale. Came on, and this guy, like, he's their fifth or sixth choice because they didn't start with their starters. He comes on, not only did he scrummage well, he storms around the field. He's burst through when Richard Wigglesworth made his heroic break, smashes the opposition out the way, drives the ball on again. Also, he and Christian Judge scrummage incredibly well. There's something infectious about them.
Well, that front row picks
up people we don't even know and makes them as good as God.
That front row with Christian Judge and Hale Radams-Alf, they won the scrum penalty.
Yes, they did.
Against an international Exeter front row,
which was fresh.
Yeah. They won the penalty, and it was from that penalty that 2 minutes later they scored a try.
Alex, there's this great thing about with the England team leadership and changing your game for the needs of the occasion, which actually they so rarely do. With Saracens, it seems to me that the same players who couldn't think their way out of trouble for England are just completely and utterly natural thinkers when they play for Saracens. Why is that?
You're right, it's the same players. It's the same, the core of that England team that had no answers against Scotland. We're on the field against Exeter, and Owen Farrell was captain on both occasions. It feels to me like it's an empowerment. They get empowered by the coaches at Saracens. I think Alex Anderson was saying he'd done no coaching for the last 4 weeks.
Wow.
At Saracens, because it had just reached that point where it's the players who are going to win this. And Exeter score that superb try, Henry Slade in the corner. You think that's game won. Even Mark McCall afterwards admitted he felt they were out on their feet at that point. They'd had done to them what they do to everyone else, which is they're having mistakes forced upon them. They were trying to force the game. They were dropping balls in contact. They were throwing passes to the floor. Nothing was working. Exeter score that try, and they changed their game in the sense that, and as Slotty's pointed out in the paper today, they changed the kickoff routine. Owen Farrell made the cross kick to the corner. They have decided on the field, we've got to do something differently here. We need to go and test Exeter in a way we have not tested them so far.
It's a good piece, wasn't it?
I've learned a lot. I've just regurgitated all of it in this answer. It was.
There's no need to read it out like you're doing.
But it was. It's true. Why could those players on the field on Saturday work out a way of changing their approach to counter what was being done to them in a way they couldn't when they were in England colours? The only thing I can feel is that they're empowered by those Saracens coaches in order to make those decisions on the field more than they are with England.
Owen, if you agree with Alex, which I do, do you get the sense that England, as many other teams now, are kind of overcoached and they can't react, they can't make these reactions?
Yeah, to a large extent. I mean, the difference is Saracens are a club team, so they spend more time together with their coaches.
So isn't the danger of being overcoached even greater then if you're there all the time?
I think that with England, international rugby, because maybe the coaches get less time, they feel they need to put their ideas over and enforce their ideas more quickly than a club coach, so they need to get that control. They don't have time to work and build something, but I think that is a theme. But I just also wonder about Eddie Jones talks a lot about empowering the players, and by the time we get to the World Cup they should be able to coach themselves, which is sort of what Alex was saying that happens at Saracens, and he says that, but I think he probably does believe it, but he's such a strong personality, and he so likes to run the show, and he so feels that he knows what's right, that I think that no matter how much he tries, one, he struggles to do that, and two, I think no matter how strong the personality of the players are, someone like Owen Farrell, I still think they go onto the pitch thinking, we've got to do what Eddie told us to do.
I totally agree with that, and I think the message there would be, if Eddie was watching, which he was, is to stand back. is to stand back a bit.
I think it's also it was interesting after the game that Mark McCall made the point of saying that his England players had learned from that Scotland experience of what not to do, and he obviously trusted them to put that lesson into practice.
I agree, and I also think that, you know, it's funny because the Saracens get block coverage all Saturday and all Sunday, and people come on to us online and our friends and say, blimey, you guys don't have to love Saracens, you know, you're all over Saracens, you're their number one fans. Well, actually, all that time we spend trying to analyse why teams are bad, when you get a good one, I think it's absolutely justified to celebrate it, because when you see great rugby and when you see a full stadium and when you see Twickenham way more animated than it's been for years at international level, well, if you didn't praise that, you would totally not be doing your job. Alex, final word.
I just think on those who do criticise the coverage that Saracens get, Jones, you're absolutely right that the coverage they're getting is for the quality of coaching and the quality that they deliver on the field. It is a shame that there's an investigation ongoing, and that has to be recognised, that there's an investigation that could find that they've broken the rules, in which case it would be a desperate stain cast upon the season. It wouldn't undermine anything, I don't think, that those players have achieved and those coaches have achieved, because it wouldn't be their crime that's been committed. But that's why people get so upset, because they feel that Saracens have bought success, and they're on us in the media all the time to ask more questions. We are asking questions, but there is an investigation ongoing which we have to now wait to pan out. But the two things are obviously connected, but the fact that we are so praiseworthy of what they do on the field is absolutely justified, because they are sensationally good.
I think some people are concerned about salary cap. I think others are using the salary cap measure as a way to express their jealousy. Munster, for one. Owen, let's have the last word. Sorry, we've had the penultimate last word. Let's have the real last word on a great day. Were you, even the last game of the season, were you as excited as I was by the rugby there?
Yeah, I was... I admit, and I said to Mrs. Slot, I felt quite jaded towards the end of this season.
She's noticed that, yeah.
Yeah, she's complaining, you jaded old bastard, she says. And I was looking forward to the end, and the day itself, though, was just as you said. The rugby was great, the occasion was great, that the atmosphere was so different to an England international there. It was a bit like club football, though rugby will not be like club football, but it was there was noise of just circulating the stadium from one set of supporters to another, and you know, it had that great sort of knife edge of 60 minutes, 75 minutes. We still didn't know who's going to win. It was only really after that final Jamie George try, 76th minute. Only at that point did we know who was going to win.
So we are going to move on from Owen and Juliet's marital problems now. And just there were a couple of other things. I'm not going to mention anything else in North London. But there was the Barbarians Day yesterday at Twickenham. And... by all accounts, it was an excellent day. I just got one observation. That was the absolute love and affection that the women Barbarians showed for the jersey and in their build-up. And what was really lovely is that you were able to go and watch them train. And for hacks of a certain vintage, it was always used to be the great... the thing that passed the time on tours. You go for 2 or 3 hours, watch the touring team train and make contacts, and locals would come down and lean on the fence and watch as well. It was just a great social thing. And people, the ice cream vendor would come along. It was all lovely. But now, because of the sheer paranoia of international men's coaches who imagine all sorts of things, like their rooms are bugged when they're not, and they put screens up and all that, it was really nice to see... The girls, the Barbarians, training. Also, the final weekend of the World 7 Circuit saw Fiji take the title, but with real minimal impact or interest, it seemed, from Britain, from England, Wales and Scotland and Northern Ireland. No moves whatsoever to get together to Team GB for the Olympic Games. Anyway, that was this season. We're just going to briefly wind up now with a few memories of the season that seemed to have been lasted for about 3 years. First of all, I'm going to ask the lads for some memories, good and bad. Owen, first of all the stories you filed, What was your best story that you filed this season? And we'll come on afterwards to the story you missed.
Well, okay.
Sorry, just one story you missed. We haven't got time for all the others.
I didn't file a story that I want to tell.
All right, go on then.
So my favourite story of the season is an Eddie Jones story,
mm-hmm.
And it's regarding the fact that he's something of a technophobe, and like many of us, when he can't find his phone, he starts to panic a bit. So he's on England duty at the time, and he can't find his phone, and he starts to get tetchy, and he rings his PA at Twickenham and says, "Where's my phone? Can you call it?" And she calls it, nothing happens, and then he starts getting even more grouchy and says, "Listen, can you please either find my phone or get me a new one, double quick. I can't do this life without a phone." And anyway, said PA goes on to the Find a Phone app that I think we probably all have to trace our kids from time to time. She goes on to find your phone, and she traces Eddie's phone, and she gets a trace of it, and it's actually in Penny Hill Park. And then she zooms in closer, and she finds that Eddie's phone is moving around Penny Hill Park, where England are training. And then she manages to trace Eddie's phone to his own pocket, where it had been sitting there on silent, and he didn't have a clue.
That was a decent one. I noticed you conspicuously left yourself out of that, Owen. So what was the one that you missed?
Well, the story that I really missed was I happened to be covering Northampton Saints against Exeter on the 28th of December, and just before when the team sheets went out before the game, we noticed that Dylan Hartley, who had been named to play, had been removed from the team sheet. We said, "Why has he been removed?" And we were told, "Well, Dylan's got a grumbly knee." Grumbly knee doesn't sound too bad, does it? So the fact that Dylan had a grumbly knee made half a sentence at the end of my match report. And so the story that I missed was that Dylan was going to be out of rugby for 6 months and may never play for England again.
You can't trust the Times, can you?
Absolutely hopeless.
Alex,
apologies to everyone.
What was your favourite story?
The story that I got, I suppose, would have been a series of pieces on the RFU's finances and the parlous state they're in. A couple of pieces on and with Francis Barron, who's written this financial report into the state of it, and I guess that made a pretty big impact over last season. The story I wish I'd written was actually, it appeared in a rival paper, but it was a revelation that Eddie Jones had tried to lure Andy Farrell back to be England's defence coach, which the ramifications of that are huge, in the sense that he sacked Andy Farrell only a couple of years earlier. Andy Farrell is now going to be the next Ireland head coach, and then Eddie went to try and lure him back, which is a story that didn't perhaps make the waves that it probably should have done. And I'd say that's a story I wish I'd written.
Okay. So was that the one you missed?
I say that, yeah, that's the one. Okay. I missed.
I wish you'd written that as well.
Okay.
The more you think about it, it's an extraordinary story, that, isn't it?
Well, that's what I mean.
Okay, everybody misses them now.
But
the
RFU finances thing, which has been an ongoing issue now for a year, and I think we've all around this table done it pretty well. But that is a huge issue and a growing issue, because for so long they thought they were riding the crest of a financial wave, and the money would just keep rolling in, and they've got Twickenham, they just sweat the asset, as they say, sell out Twickenham, sell the boxes, build a new corporate suite, which still hasn't been sold out. And actually the reality is that every year now they're trying to save £10 million, making more people redundant, cutting all the really important grassroots work, player development work, all the important stuff that goes on behind the scenes is getting shredded because of some awful decisions that got made a couple of years ago.
That was, I totally agree, and we've got to remember, which I think we always do, that we are listened to by masses of people in the community game, and we're both in it, and you know, what they've had to go through with so little support, financial or otherwise, is just amazing.
Did you miss a story this year?
Not that I know of, no.
That was a silly question.
No, I don't think so.
You can't contribute to that element of the podcast.
Well, I can, actually, but one I... There was one I did miss, and that was after the semi, after the final of the European Cup between Leinster and Saracens. In our player ratings, we had the Saracens fullback down as Andy Good. No, it was only in one edition. And how on earth did I not notice that the great Lummox used to play fly half was in the European Cup final with slightly bandy looking as he always did. And I never, I thought the guy who played 15 was brilliant, but no idea it was him. Anyway, that was a shock. I then found out that it was just a big error on the desk. But, you know, a lot of people, when they saw his name there, must have had a heart attack. They think, what the hell was he doing out there? I think the story I liked doing the least from the personal and emotional point of view was on Mark Jennings, the former Sale player.
Oh, yeah.
Who has had horrendous trouble ever since his birth, when he was basically brought up in an emergency shelter in South Africa, up until the time when he'd always wanted to find out who his father was. And just before we met, he'd basically freaked when he found out that the guy he always wanted to find had actually been the man who raped his mother. And that was the only interview I've ever done where I wanted it to be to come to an end, because I didn't know where it was going to go. But luckily, there is a really lovely tail piece to it. That was last week. He was chosen, or he was appointed as player coach of Wilmslow. And I can tell you that to have got that job, he must have improved magnificently and markedly with the help of medical people and also the RPA.
Oh, good luck to him, mate.
Just so glad that he's come out and doing that, because he was in a very dark place. And others have been in similar places, not quite as dark as that. I'm not saying it was any credit to me, but it was a heck of a story. Boys, we've met some lovely people. Who are our favourite people? Alex, what lovely people have you met this year in rugby? You would have met a lot outside.
Yeah, the guy I had probably the most fun talking to was Joe Cockensinger's dad, who just told some lovely stories of their time playing together over in Brunei, where, so Joe's dad was in the army, and Joe was, I think, 15 at the time, but a giant. So his dad went and lied to his army bosses about Joe's age so he could get Joe into play for his army regiment team. And there is this teenage kid just smashing through all these adult men's players, and just the pride and the joy that exuded from him, as I spoke to him about playing alongside his lad. And that weekend, Joe went out and played for England at Twickenham, and the whole family were there. And Joe's younger brother is in England's age grade setup. But it was just lovely. And actually, I was reminded of it when I saw footage of Jordan Henderson and his dad after the game in Madrid, and just the bond that they had on the pitch side. And it just took me back to that conversation with Joe's dad. And
good one.
Yeah, so I got a lot of joy hearing those stories. Big Joe's dad was my favourite person of the year.
Owen.
I've got two contenders for this category. One is a player we know quite well, Mako Vunipola. But I had a very long and enjoyable coffee for an interview with him, and we got on to talking about why he's got the most mobile pair of eyebrows in world rugby. They are absolutely extraordinary. And
Dennis Healy, like, do you remember Dennis Healy?
Well, they're not as big as Dennis Healy's. I remember those.
Not Bushy.
No, they're not. It's not that Bushy. It's the fact they just go up and down when he's talking, without him even, when he's not even trying to stress anything. They just sort of, they have a life of their own. Yeah. And so we the conversation ended up with, can you sell a dummy by moving one of your eyebrows?
Yeah.
And he said he was going to work on it.
Okay.
So I love Mako.
I like those technical points you're bringing up. That was a good one.
And you've left it open for a follow-up piece.
Yeah.
In the summer,
have you learned to sell it down with your eyebrows?
Yeah.
And my other new favourite player is Gloucester's winger Ollie Thorley, who is a bit of a one-off, a idiosyncratic young man. Mm-hmm. And so we were talking about, he scored the try of the season, and so I was trying to talk to him about the try of the season, and we got onto subjects such as Pret-a-Manger in the Strand, where he lost his front tooth biting on a baguette. His favourite Christmas carol.
Which was what?
In the Bleamit Winter. And why the Gustav Holst version of In the Bleak Midwinter is better than the other one.
Okay. Well, I've always thought it was.
Well, I thought the other one was. I'm trying to remember who it's by. I think it's by Harold Dark, but okay. I might just be name-dropping and completely got that wrong.
Okay. This is still the Ruck Rugby Podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Mine would be, I'm just going to go for someone like, I went to interview Rochelle Clark last week. She I expect her to be brought in on a throne or pushed carried in a sedan chair by 15 naked servants. But when she sat down, I said, how are you? And she said, oh, I'm much better now. I said, what do you mean you're much better? You've 104,000 caps and you're the greatest front row player the game's ever seen. The most cap. She said, oh, the last couple of years I've lost a little bit of confidence in my game. So I thought, well, if you've lost confidence in your game, we've all had it. What an absolutely lovely rugby player and a lovely woman Rochelle Clark is. And next week, she sneaks back to Twickenham because she's coach of the Buckinghamshire Women's County team in the Women's County Championship final. So she's going back.
I think that probably the theme in all of these answers is that we see a lot of professional sportsmen, a lot of rugby players who are guarded in what they say, particularly when they're talking about rugby, and that actually our favourite memories are when that guard drops, or our most memorable conversations are when the guard drops, or when the conversation can actually bring some of the personality out of them. And
Quite right.
I mentioned Henry Slade on Saturday night. I'm not saying that it was an enjoyable experience talking to him when he was in such a desolate state, but the guard had gone, and you understood his emotions and his passion at that time. I remember sitting down. A few of us were there with John Mitchell in an England camp during the Six Nations, and we spoke to him a couple of hours after his son had made his debut for the New Zealand one-day cricket team and had played a winning role in that day. And again, similar to my story about just talking to Joe Cook and seeing his dad, but there was no party line, there was no guarded answer. He was, you know, the pride that he showed, that, you know, he had his eyes were glistening. He was being genuine as he talked about watching his son play cricket for his country. That's really important, because actually that's what our listeners, our readers, they want. They're interested in they love rugby, but they love rugby people, and to get beyond the guard and the media training is really important to selling the sport.
Is Alex not talking here about the huge degree of media management and the fact that this is keeping so much colour, so much vivacity and so many lovely people away from us and therefore away from our readers and listeners?
Yeah, I think so. I actually would say I don't really understand quite how we've got to this, because I think there is some media management, especially when you get into an international team like England. There is a lot of media management then, and we know that when players come to talk to the journalists when they're representing England, that they do get a brief beforehand. Sometimes they get a sheet of points that they're supposed to get over, or how to handle tricky certain whatever the question might be. But on the whole, I don't think they get managed that badly. I don't think they get given so much what you can and can't say. I just think it gets sold down from the senior players to the junior players. Watch out what you say. And I think in a way that kind of denies the junior players, the younger players, the opportunity to be themselves and be a personality. I mean, Ollie Thorley, clearly no one had told him to shut his gob and stop being interesting. But I don't quite work out why we've got there. I don't think there's a climate in rugby journalism to stitch people up at all. But clearly, from time to time, players have felt they've been badly treated, and that's where it's come from. But it's gone way too far, and it ain't good for the game. It's a shame for the game.
If you're listening and you're a media manager, my advice would be, You've got nine nails in the coffin at the moment. Remove eight of them and leave one, and let's see where we go. We'll get a lot further. Next one, favourite venues where we've been, chaps, covering rugby this year. Alex?
I'm going to say Lyon. I went to Lyon against Saracens in the Champions Cup. It's not a stadium that generates the same sort of fervour as Clermont or Toulon, but what a lovely city it is, and to spend a weekend in Lyon exploring the city and then go to the rugby was was pretty much a perfect away trip. And
you just had a night out, didn't you? That's what you're saying. You had a really nice, good night
out.
Yeah,
I had a good night out.
That's all very well. We've got to beat Monte Carlo, though, because our producer has just come back from Monte Carlo, so we've got to beat that. We can't let him win, Slotty. Come up with something decent.
Okay, well, far more glamorous than Monte Carlo is Ashton Gate in Bristol.
Of course it is, yeah. Of course it is.
It's hands down. No, that is my contender for venue of the season. It just, from day one of the season, went there for Bristol Bath, and there were 26,000 people there, and it was just like, whoa, welcome to the Premiership, and how great to have you here.
I felt that about Newcastle for the final of the European Cup. The city was wonderful, so welcoming, fans were excellent. It's a great weekend, and so all off to Marseille next year, all you Ruck listeners out there. And the next item is by request of my two colleagues. It's my top five rants this season. I'll let you know if I think they're justified, but who's going to start off with number five?
Okay, Jonesy's top five rants of the season. Coming in at number five, Danny Cipriani should be playing for England.
Okay, well, that I do rant on about that, but I wouldn't say I'm lonely in that, am I? I mean, other people think that as well, don't they?
All right, well, Dave Atwood should be playing for England.
Well, that's going to be a bit lonely there.
Don Armand, Simon Shaw.
Oh, has anyone seen Don Armand this week?
James Haskell.
Simon Shaw's a bit old now, he's 72.
You're still banging on about Simon Shaw should be playing for England.
Well, he's one of the two greatest locks I've ever seen play the game. And if you weren't into anyone who was there in the 2019 second test in Pretoria, could not argue.
I was at that game.
Well done.
He was quite good.
Okay, number four,
coming in at number four, the death of Welsh regional rugby and how Newport should be Newport and not the Newport Gwent Dragons.
Okay. Did anyone notice the number of Welsh regional teams who reached the last four in the rather weak Guinness Pro 14 this year? I rest my case. And in Wales, whoever goes around saying, come on, I'm a regional Gwent man. I'm a Gwent man. No one says that. Okay, number three, get on with it.
Coming at number three, the sad demise of Tottenham Hotspur and why they don't win a trophy.
The sad demise? Sorry. When you say sad demise, this year we've seen off Real Madrid, Barcelona. We were just luckily beaten by those awful people in the Northwest. And, no, sorry, you mean the why don't they spend any money? This season, because of Daniel Levy went two.
Oh, I think we've had enough of this.
They went two transfer windows without buying a single player.
You're only allowed 30 seconds on each rant.
All right, you know what I'm going to say. Right, what second?
Number two is Andy Goode lecturing journalists on how to be a journalist.
Well, he should do it more, because we all know he's the Pope, the bishop, and the head of the journalistic department. So whenever Andy, as he does regularly, gives his opinions on real journalism, that's what we want to hear. So I will be keeping on about that and finding out what his journalistic background was. All right, what's number one? Get on with it.
And number one is the sad fact that Stuart Lancaster does not get sufficient praise for Leinster's success.
Yeah, very funny, very funny. All I said was 2 years ago, Leinster won magnificently in Bilbao. And the only person anyone asked about this was not what you I accuse you to. It wasn't what you normally do, say head coach. You all went to the assistant coach, Stuart Lancaster. Poor old Leo Cullen, who'd been there since doomsday and brought them forward, didn't get a bloody mention.
You don't feel strong enough about this.
No, I don't. No, well, those good rants.
Very good, well done. Okay. Well, very done. We look forward to five more next season. Actually, probably by the end of the week.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
England. We all have a rant about England. And in fact, he didn't sign anyone in those two windows.
Andy Goode.
Let's just wrap up now. England, to win the World Cup and to be very competitive. Alex, just in brief, lads, what have they got to do? Let's name some action they've got to take.
They need to make sure that Mako Vunipola and Jack Noel are both fit for the World Cup.
Good one.
Well, they can do that, Jack Noel, can't they?
No.
Okay. Well, I think they got 27 decent wings, but you're probably right.
He's not just a wing. He's an open side flanker and an outside centre and a wing and a fullback.
Okay. All right. No, you're right. I'm wrong. They need to check that Elliot Daly can catch the ball, because he still hasn't proven that. It's just that he wasn't tested enough under the high ball in the Six Nations.
Fair. For me, it's Marouane Toji. Eddie always says, oh no, mate, he's a lock. Well, I'm not quite sure what that means, because Saracens have played him in the last few games as a blindside flanker. That has enabled them to bump up their pack hugely with Will Skelton and George Cruz. England have got nothing like that power. If they put Marrow 6, it puts an end to debates of bringing back long-gone blindside flankers. Marrow is a superb number 6. It then gives you the opportunity to put another big man in the second row, and who knows, England's driving maul may then make more than 3 inches. Any more, Alex?
Eddie needs to work out his bench. So he knows it's 15. He needs to know who's his backup scrum half.
Backup scrum half to who?
Ben Youngs.
Slotty, should Ben Youngs be the starting scrum half?
Probably not, actually. That's a long debate.
Okay.
I think we should rewind 4 years and start the whole scrum half development programme from the start. But
okay, go on then. What's your next one?
Next one, England need to know how not to crap themselves when they've got a decent lead. Because that's what they do. They get a decent lead and they lose it.
Okay. Well, for me, they've got to free up the midfield, and I don't think you can do that by having a half-fit Bintio and a half-fit Manu Tuilagi. I think they've got to free it up, and I think we saw enough footballers on Saturday to last them a lifetime. How far will they get? Are they going to really make an impact?
I think they could get knocked out in the group stages, unlikely, and I think they could win it.
Alex? Which is more likely of the two?
Probably winning is more likely of the two, but my actual prediction would be that they'll go to a semi-final and get beaten by the All Blacks.
Semi-final, I think I might settle that for that now if I was English. Finally, before we go, before we disappear for the summer, our gods of the season. Owen, god of the season, please.
For me, the season has been about delivering a performance on the day, which is what England have done on occasions but not regularly, which is what Saracens have done throughout. But on that theme, the god of the season has to be Warren Gatland for what he did with Wales, because every time they played in the Six Nations, he worked out a way of bringing the best out of them. I don't think they are the best 1-15 players by any means, but what he did, what he does, what he did then was phenomenal, and that's what England need too. So Warren is my god of the season.
One vote for Warren Gatland. Alex Lowe.
So when I was considering this, I went to my performances of the season, which were Mako Vunipola against Ireland and Jack Noel against Saracens.
Mm.
But for that game against Ireland, his all-round contribution, and it was a crying shame that he didn't finish the season in the final at Twickenham. For that game against Ireland, for setting the standards that very, very few players reach. I mean, you talked about Simon Shaw in 09. I'm going to give it to Mako for a prop forward delivering that kind of a display.
Okay, that's two good ones. Well, mine is slightly different, because I do think that to win a race, you have to be leading at the tape. So it doesn't matter how late you come, you have to be leading. So that's why my god of the season is Ralph Adams-Hale.
Oh, lovely.
It is, because he came on with his fiery red hair. He picked up the pace instantly. He charged all over the field. He played a part in the last bit, and he got his winner's medal. And God bless him. I just thought he was an absolute ginger nut. He was brilliant. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, thank you so much for listening throughout this season to the ruck. Thank you for reacting. Thanks for all our loyal people who retreated us. It was really richly appreciated. Thanks to our producer. Thank you, Alex. Thanks for everyone for downloading the ruck. We'll be back soon. Please stay with us. And may fortune's laurel leaves be ever strewn in your path.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
Yes. How would that go in the booth?
Badly. Go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.